How About Them Podcast with Landon McCool.
How about them Cowboys indeed?
Hello, welcome back to another episode of How About Them Podcast. And we are less than a month out from the NFL draft, which is exciting. We got a little bit of Cowboys news coming in this week. It's always kind of an interesting time, this kind of quiet before the storm of the draft. And then we get a real kind of extended layoff of news and information in that kind of really deep lull that exists in the summer after the draft. So but right now, the owners and the key decision makers are in Phoenix for the annual owners meeting. So we always kind of get some information, some tidbits, some rule changes, all that kind of thing kind of comes out in the owners meeting. So it is kind of an interesting reprieve temporarily from draft talk to kind of actually discuss league rules. Free agents, trades, that sort of thing, because you have all the key decision makers in the NFL all in one spot all at once. So, there's some information that comes out there, and we have some of that information I'm going to give you. And then a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about some potential spark targets for day three kind of range guys. Now, these aren't guys that necessarily the Cowboys are known to be interested in, but these are guys that are, tested very well, have very good spark numbers, and that could be available at positions that the Cowboys might be looking at later on in day three. So let's get it started like we always do with Check With Me's.
Wide 80! Kill!
All right, let's start first with just kind of news and notes that have come out of the owners' meeting, as I discussed before. The first thing that we obviously need to discuss is some obviously housekeeping news, some contract news. Jason Witten got signed to a 4-year extension, and it was just announced this morning. This is basically just a contract salary cap housekeeping move. Jason was set to count, I think it was, and technically he is still set to count. I think it was something like $12 million. His base number was $7.4 million. And then he had some, signing bonus that was due to him. And then they basically re-signed it. This is the last year of his deal. So they basically gave him a 4-year extension. And then what they did is they converted they're going to reduce his base salary to something like, I was talking to KD Drummond and Joey Ikes a little bit earlier, and their thoughts is that they'll reduce their base to something like $1 million and then convert the remaining, whatever it is, I think it's 6.4, whatever's left on his what was supposed to be paid on his base salary this year. I think the total was 7.4. So let's say they make his new base $1 million for 2017. They're going to take the remainder of that, the $6.4 million, divide it up over the 5 years, because it was a 4-year extension plus this year. So divide that 6.4 evenly over 5 years, and then that would make his number, I think, something like $2.3 million this year. So that's going to save the Cowboys up to $5 million in cap. Now, we don't know what they first of all, they haven't actually – all they did was sign the contract that kind of re-put in the triggers. It extended Jason's contract by 4 years, and then it basically, because they've extended his contract, they have, basically re-put in the ability to have those triggers to convert his, base salary into what do you call bonus money, basically, which the bonus money is what allows you to spread it out over multiple years. So, they haven't actually triggered the flip of the money. So technically, his current base salary is the same as it was before he signed the contract, and they're just waiting until they actually want to, kind of flip that switch. What could be happening is that they may be unsure about the level of Doug Free's seriousness in retirement. So if Doug can be kind of coerced into coming back into training camp, or maybe at the end of training camp, so he doesn't have to go through that, and you know, continue to play football, you know, they may need that extra money. I think, you know, he was set to cost them, I think, something like $7.5 million. So they kind of needed some more space for that, just in case they still wanted him. And, you know, at the end of the day, they can also kind of you know, work the money around a little bit more. But this gave them you know, a way to do this without having to flip triggers in other people's contracts that maybe they didn't necessarily want to flip, like you know, Dez Bryant or Crawford. They weren't exactly sure that they wanted to commit more years or potentially commit more dead money to those contracts, so they decided to kind of redo Witten's deal, which at 34 is just amazing. So I think this is a great move, and basically they're just kind of setting themselves up with more options, essentially, and making Jason a Cowboy, not, you know, not having to worry about what's going on, you know, or a possibly another, you know, messy divorce. Speaking of, we really haven't gotten any news about Tony Romo. You know, Jason Garrett was interviewed by, you know, the Dallas media that kind of followed him around up to follow the Cowboys up to the owners meetings. And he really, you know, I mean, Jason has been extremely, you know, political about this whole situation. And clearly it has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, for all reports that we're hearing is that him and Tony are not on speaking terms, or at least Tony is not speaking to Jason. So, you know, he wasn't saying much. The interesting notes came out later, and actually just came out right before I started recording this podcast, was that Jerry Jones has come out and said that, you know, that this will probably, this might linger into training camp, which basically I think was his opportunity to call Houston and Denver's bluff and saying, hey, we may not just release this guy. You know, I mean, I think what that does is that that really does put Houston or Denver in a bind, because they don't want to wait that long before having to bring Tony into camp to kind of learn his system. That's really late in the game for your starting quarterback to be learning your system. You know, do I think that the Cowboys want to wait until training camp to deal with Tony Romo? No, I really think they'd much rather get this done, you know, way sooner than that. That, you know, there is obviously a certain amount of chicken being played on the Cowboys side as well, because, you know, you don't really know if, you know, what's going to happen when OTAs roll around and Tony Romo's supposed to report. So I think that, you know, it's an interesting note to see. I know a lot of people on an emotional level are really upset about this. Honest to God, like, I'm at the point now where I am separated from the emotion of this. Like, it could get ugly. Tony may say some stuff. Look, I mean, we all watch what happened with Brett Favre in Green Bay, and eventually, you know, time heals all wounds, and Romo has always kind of looked up to Brett Favre in a certain way. So maybe, you know, maybe that's kind of the route this has to go for a little while, until, you know, eventually Romo comes back and sees it away. And I know that that's not really what Cowboys fans want to hear, but, you know, sometimes these things get ugly, and it's, you know, the marriage between a team and a quarterback is a real, you know, strong thing, and especially when you have a true franchise quarterback who, you know, has been the leader and the face of your franchise for almost a decade, essentially. You know, that's really that can be an ugly divorce. And what can make it even uglier is, again, you know, the Cowboys found a very good replacement. So there is a certain amount of feeling amongst Romo supporters that everyone has kind of just let Romo down and all this stuff. I think everyone just needs to realize that Tony's under contract, you know, and I think that, you know, there's been all kinds of different reports in the media, and, you know, who knows what to believe about his state or how he feels about certain people on the team. But I have, you know, you have to realize that, again, they're doing Tony a favor by, you know, trying to get him into a situation outside of here where he can start. Like, that's where the favor begins. They don't have to let him go. I mean, they have already budgeted for him to be on the team. So, you know, obviously, would they like to let him go? Of course they would. But I really think that they would really like to get something out of it, and they really think that if they play a little bit of hardball, they can get something out of it, and I think that's well within their rights to do that. So, yeah, I would just say if this is troubling for you, or, you know, or tough to watch, then I just think you need to buckle up and get ready, because I think that this is kind of where this is at for right now, and unfortunately, you know, unfortunately for fans, you know, that love both of the sides involved in this, that this is tough to watch. But I think for people that are, you know, kind of cold idealists, they really want to see Cowboys get a pick out of this. And they really want to see something, you know, brought to us in return instead of just giving away a legitimate good quarterback for, you know, for nothing. And I think that's fair. So the last bit of important news that's come out is that it appears, and I still haven't gotten any kind of hard numbers yet on years or how much it is, and I guess how much doesn't really matter because there's no cap, but it sounds like Rich Bisaccia, Scott Linehan, and Rod Marinelli all got extended contracts, which is just fantastic. You know, listen, you can say what you want about their performance, and I think most people aren't complaining about their performance, I don't think. I think you're pretty thrilled with the coaching job that this team has done, especially the offensive coaching job last year. But I think the defensive coaching job was spectacular as well, and special teams. You know, we didn't. I think we're pretty happy with where our special teams are at mostly. I think it can't be overstated the importance of continuity on an NFL football team. You know, when you're designing a team, when you're trying to assemble talent, I think having a system in place, keeping that system in place so that you can learn it, you know, the intricacies of it more as the years go on, instead of having to reset up and reteach your scouting department what your new coach is like. You know, right now, these scouts, these coaches, they've been working in the same building together for a while now. They know what these guys are looking for. The scouts know what these coaches are looking for in a player. The coaches trust the scouts to get the players that are going to be, you know, fits for what they're trying to scheme. And I think that's important. I think that's how you get. That's how you draft well. It's because you have. It's not just about finding talent. That's not always the problem when you're drafting or when you're scouting players. It's about finding fit for your scheme. And I think that sometimes you can draft a good player who may not be a good fit for your team. And if that's the case, then it really is kind of all for naught, you know. So I think that extending these guys and continuing the continuity on this team, you know, obviously if things turned really south and really poorly, that'd be a different story. But I do think that as the arrow continues to point up, to continue to reward these guys, to continue on the continuity here is one of those things where it can really start to snowball into positive results, which is, you know, what you hope for. So, and I think that's all the news that's fit to print for the owners meeting. So I think let's move on to the next segment. Let's talk about some day three Spark athletes who might be on the Cowboys radar. All right. So we talked about some of the guys who, you know, could be the top two rounds, day one and day two kind of talents that the Cowboys could be looking at. But we haven't had a chance to kind of do any sort of, you know, deep dive into third day prospects yet. And you know, we're going to definitely have some more draft gurus on to have conversations about guys who might specifically be targeted by the Cowboys. But, you know, right now we're still kind of waiting to see exactly who's getting visits. And, you know, we've heard some names, but we haven't gotten a full list yet. So when we get a full list, we're definitely going to, you know, revisit some of these late round third day prospects. Because we'll have a better idea of which one of these guys potentially could be on the Cowboys radar based on, like I said, the visits and that sort of thing. So, but until then, you know, the only other kind of driving factor that we can kind of determine, you know, who might pique the Cowboys' interest, besides obviously tape, is Spark numbers. And we've talked about Spark before, and it's the, you know, the kind of formula, the algorithm, however you want to refer to it, that Nike has come up with, that basically, you know, measures all these different athletic measurables and kind of uses a formula to combine them to output a athletic grade, essentially a numeric value to that particular person's athleticism, which is super useful for teams to kind of help, you know, uniformly quantify athleticism in order to kind of, you know, determine. Well, I mean, especially useful for guys for the teams in the late round, right? Because here's the thing: when you're drafting up top, when you're drafting prospects, you know, in the first few days, you know, there's obviously a talent, you know, scouting situation. You are looking at the player's football acumen, their ability to play the game, combined with athleticism. And, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about the many different elements that go into drafting prospects, especially up top, where the risk is higher because the cost, right? You know, when you start talking about guys in the fifth and the sixth and the seventh round, you know, usually it's fourth round is right where people start talking about, okay, from the fourth round on is kind of, you know, your developmental prospects. The fourth round is also, you know, that's kind of, fourth round is really the magic round, really, because it's right where you start thinking about taking some high level developmental talent. You could take a guy in the fourth round a lot of times if, he has some off field issues. Maybe he's a day two talent, but he fell to the fourth round because he's got some unresolved, issues, or he's got one thing that's about him physically that is undesirable. Maybe he's too short, or you know, something like that, or he's got short arms for a pass rusher, or something like that. So, fourth round is kind of that line of demarcation where, okay, third round you really want to still be trying to get starters. Fourth round, you know, there's going to be definite warts on these guys. It's really just more about, you know, what kind of wart. So these guys that we're going to mention may even be on the fourth round. These are guys that you could probably get later than that. And at that point, the Cowboys, understandably, the Cowboys seem to like to prefer to take chances on extremely good athletes. And it makes sense, right? Because, you know, ultimately, the guys that you get that have got by on talent alone, if they're being taken that late in the draft, they probably don't have, you know, they obviously don't have the requisite athleticism combined with that talent. Otherwise they'd be a higher draft pick. And if they are, you know, kind of, you know, average to below average athletes who are, you know, try hard players, you know, their chances of developing and succeeding in the NFL, especially, you know, at that being drafted that low and not giving that much opportunity. I mean, that's the other thing about being drafted later in the round is that you also aren't provided as much opportunity to, you know, you're probably not going to get as many reps as the guys above you. So what you want to do with these late round picks is kind of take a flyer on either guys that have, you know, filtered down through your board somehow that, you know, maybe you had higher grades on that suddenly are there, or you want to take your chance on these elite athletes that you can develop them and teach them how to do one or two things that they can really get good at, and then use that athleticism, because that we know that elite athleticism can translate once you teach skill in the NFL. So I think that's why they want to take chances a lot of times with, you know, high spark athletes later in the round. So that's kind of the brief primer on why we are looking at these guys. And I do want to preface this that I don't think any of these guys, I've heard anything specifically about the Cowboys talking to any of these guys necessarily. Maybe Shaq Griffin, who is the last corner that I'm going to mention, I think I might have heard them mention something about him. But other than that, I haven't really heard anything specifically that the Cowboys are interested in these guys. These are just guys who tested out at a pretty decent level as a spark prospect. And so I felt like, okay, and I knew that these are also names that are being bandied about kind of in the later rounds. So I just thought that these could be that kind of perfect nexus of upside athlete where the Cowboys might be able to take them in a later round. So I wanted to start with Georgia State wide receiver Robert Davis, who I think is just really kind of a fascinating athletic profile. He's 6'3", 219 pounds. He's got 33-inch arms, 9.5-inch hands. He ran a 4.4. Which is really good for that size, obviously. And then you combine that with a 6.823 cone, a 4.28 short shuttle, and that's really, really impressive numbers. And I think maybe the most impressive number there are his jumps, where he's got a 41-inch broad and an 11 and a third inch broad jump. He really did kind of jump out of the gym. The first thing you ask when you see athletes like that, especially guys, you know, who went to a school like Georgia State, is how did, you know, how did he slip through the cracks here? And it seems from what I've read about Robert is that, you know, he played at a prep school where they were doing a whole bunch of running, and he played wide receiver in high school, but their offense was basically built around running the football, which, you know, sometimes you question some of these high school coaches that don't want to get their, you know, giant, fast, athletic wide receivers the football more often. But, you know, he gets to Georgia State. He totally dominates the Sun Belt. You know, he's first team all Sun Belt, and, you know, puts up all these outrageous numbers. And you see him dominating, you know, the tape, you put on the tape, he's dominating, you know, smaller school competition, you know, but at the same time, this is a deep wide receiver class this year. You know, he did it, like he did everything he did, on a lower level. And just to kind of get to his Spark numbers, he's a two sigma athlete, meaning he's twice as athletic as the normal, average NFL wide receiver. I'm sorry. He's actually three times more athletic because he's a two sigma. He basically is at the 98.8th percentile for all NFL wide receivers in regards to athleticism, which is just outrageous. So, keep in mind with Robert Davis, you know, like I said, he produced a lot. His tape is good, but the problem is that his tape is just against bad competition. So, and because of the depth of the class, he probably gets pushed way down. Someone's going to take a chance on this guy and get a real athlete, an incredible, incredible athlete. Speaking of another incredible athlete at wide receiver, Michigan wide receiver Jehu Chesson. You know, Jehu is not quite the athlete that Robert Davis is. He's actually kind of similarly built in a lot of ways, except he's just lighter. He's 6'3", just like Davis, but he's only 204 pounds. He's got slightly longer arms, 33.25-inch arms, and slightly smaller hands. Ran a 4.47, which is a little bit slower than Davis, but he had a 4.09 short shuttle and 6.67 three cones. So he does seem to be a little bit more explosive in changing direction, and he and his jumps weren't quite as good as Davis, but, you know, 35.5-inch vertical is not great, but 11 is not, you know, not anything that you're gonna, you know, stop the presses for. 11-inch broad jump is still a pretty damn good broad jump. So you know, he was kind of, you know, sharing the wide receiver core with, you know, another guy that was basically just as heralded as him. I can't remember his name. Durbin right now, I think is what it is. Dogba. It'll come up to me in just a second, I swear. Anyways, he got injured late in 2015 in a bowl game, and it kind of, you know, derailed his season last year. He just wasn't the same. Didn't have the same explosion. He still kind of seemed to be, you know, recovering from that. And I just feel like, you look at those numbers and, you know, he played at a big school. He didn't have great production last year, but he was first team all Big Ten in 2015. So I think there is something to work there with. I just feel like, you know, that he is very slight, 6'3", 204. Yeah, I'd like to see him add a couple more pounds, but I do think that is, you know, the kind of height, the kind of speed the Cowboys would look for, and he, you know, he could be a nice developmental player. And again, both of these guys are probably going to get pushed down and lost in this really deep wide receiver class. So, okay, the next guy is UTEP running back Aaron Jones. So Aaron, he is in the 75th percentile for running backs. He's 5'9". 208 with 32.5-inch arms, 9.5-inch hands. Ran a 4.56, which, you know, is not exactly blazing speed, but he ran a 4.2 short shuttle, 6.82 three cone, 37.5-inch vertical, and a 10.5-inch broad jump. You know, when you watch him, he's very explosive on tape. He's very explosive, like. In change of direction, the 40 time is really kind of indicative of his speed. I mean, he's not going to outrun you, but he will get around you immediately. I feel like he could be a potential, you know, maybe an undrafted free agent or a late round chance at trying to replace, Lance Dunbar. You know, there's definitely guys who are probably better suited for that role. Jeremy McNichols, you know, guys like that, maybe Logan from North Carolina. But I think that this is a guy who is kind of flying under the radar a little bit more. So if those guys aren't available, that maybe, you know, you take a flyer on this guy and he can do some of the things, you know, as a receiving back out of the backfield. You know, he can run routes. He can make people miss in the open field. He just may not run away from everybody. So I think he might be a guy that they could take a look at. Next up, Michigan linebacker Ben Gadion. Ben is, you know, again, this is an elite athlete, but he's a good athlete for a guy that you're going to find late in the draft. He's above average athlete, 6'2", 244, ran a 4.75 with a 4.13 shuttle and a 6.98 three cone. You know, and he had a 34.5-inch vertical, which is not bad for a guy's size. But this is a guy who, you know, I liked because he had a pretty decent profile. It wasn't great. I mean, I admit he's definitely way below where some of these other guys that I put. But I thought that, you know, the Cowboys do tend to pick up a linebacker, you know, every year. He is an inside linebacker, which might end up, you know, it might be good to get some more depth there, especially if you're not sure exactly what you're going to get out of Jalen Smith. And then, you know, I like the way that he kind of played. I mean, he was kind of overshadowed in the Michigan defense for sure. I mean, Michigan's defense is very, you know, full of all kinds of playmakers on all three levels. And he's a, kind of just a workman type middle linebacker who really, I just feel like can get it done, you know, where you need it. While he's waiting to you know, kind of learn the position, if he's not going to be a starter for you guy, which, you know, he may not. You know, I think what he can do is I think he can come in and be a real good special teams player. So, you know, maybe this is a guy who comes in and kind of replaces Gashkar. And he probably doesn't cost you anything more than maybe a seventh round or an undrafted free agent, you know, phone call. So it could be a good pickup later on. And then I got two final guys are two cornerbacks. You know, so maybe if the Cowboys pick up a corner early and they wanted to double dip later, here's some guys that they could look at. Jalen Myrick. Myrick was a one sigma athlete, is in the top 87th percentile of corners. He's 5'10", 200 pounds. He's got 31.6-inch arms, so those aren't really long arms. It's kind of, he's really pushing the thresholds here, though. After having all those conversations about thresholds, based on some of the guys that we have seen that the Cowboys have been visiting with, I wouldn't be surprised if they are starting to form a whole separate subcategory of thresholds for slot corners. And if that's the case, then Jalen Myrick might be, you know, able to clear those, because I think he's kind of in line with what you would be looking for in a nickel or a dime corner. So he ran a 4.28, which I think got you know, really overlooked because of John Ross's 4.22. But yeah, he ran a 4.28, which was you know, surprising. I think not many people knew. He ran a 4.22 in the short shuttle and the 7.06 in the three cone. And it had a 37-inch vertical and a 10-foot broad. So he definitely could be that guy. I mean, clearly he has speed to burn there, and he could be a guy that they could be looking at is kind of a late round flyer. He may actually go a little bit higher than some of these other guys, and Shaq Griffin as well, just because of their position and their combined athleticism. But Shaq Griffin is a guy I really want to talk about as well. I love this profile, and if you can get him later, look, he's in the 95th percentile for athletes. You know, 6 foot, 194, 32, and a little bit under and a half inch arms, which is, you know, all those really hit some good metrics for the Cowboys as far as corners go. Ran a 4.38, which is fantastic at that size. With a 1.54 split, a 10-yard split, which is really, really good. You're in a 4.14 short shuttle and a 6.87 three cone, and did a 38.5-inch vertical with an 11-foot broad jump. So I really like Shaq Griffin a lot. I got turned on to Shaq Griffin by a friend of the show, Bird Dog 26, at Bird Dog 26. Good, great follow, who does some consulting work scouting for the Cowboys and is really great with a lot of these late round guys. And well, he specifically is a UCF guy, so he loves Shaq Griffin, and since he's also a defensive back coach guy, he loves Shaq Griffin a lot. So he turned me on to him early, and I loved him, and then he really wowed a lot of people, I think, with some of his combine numbers. So if he makes it into the later rounds, that is a guy that I think the Cowboys might seriously be interested in if they haven't already double dipped at the corner position. All right, that's all I got, guys. I hope it was enough. I hope you enjoyed it. We're gonna have some more guests. I think maybe next week we'll have somebody back in. We're gonna have some conversations about these prospects a little bit more. We might have some more news by next week. Who knows what the situation or how this Romo situation will play out in the next few days and potentially weeks. But FanRag Sports is going to have you covered no matter what. So make sure you check FanRagSports.com for all the updates. Make sure you follow me on Twitter @McCoolBTB. And until next time, happy trails, everybody.